The removal of the giant statue of Robert E. Lee from Monument Avenue in Richmond, Virginia, does not mean the end of racism any more than the Civil Rights Act of 1965 marked an end. We still have racism and still work to end it in America, but there's great disagreement about how. Our guest this hour takes exception to the approach some people use. John McWhorter is the author of a new book, Woke Racism, subtitled How a New Religion Has Betrayed Black America. John McWhorter teaches linguistics, American studies, and music history at Columbia University. He also writes pieces for the New York Times and the Atlantic and hosts the podcast Lexicon Valley. He last visited in 2016 about his book Words on the Move. So, John McWhorter, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. State the problem first. Let people know where you're coming from.
Well, what I mean is that there are problems that Black America has, and they require solutions. And so I'm not coming from a Republican or a bootstraps point of view. But these days, there's an idea that what Black people need is for white people to show that they know what racism is in various ways. And the idea is that doing that is somehow a prelude to doing real things. But in real life, just showing that you know racism exists and signaling it and, you know, liking it with a capital L and talking about it on Twitter is the work, as it's actually put in books like, you know, Robin DiAngelo's White Fragility. And the problem with all of that is that if all it is about signaling to each other that you know that racism exists, or among Black people, signaling among one another that we know that racism can be a problem for us, then it doesn't help people who need help. And often it ends up being unintentionally an anti-Black philosophy, because a lot of the way we're being taught to show that we know racism exists is by saying that because racism has existed and it does exist, that it's wrong to submit Black people to mainstream standards. And so you see that in school, you see that in justice, you see that in just what we think of as history and morality. And even that alone, and there are more concrete examples, but even that alone is unintentionally racist. It's diminishing. It's anti-Black. And we see so much more of that kind of thing in the name of what's being called anti-racism.
Well, the title itself is going to anger some people. Can you be racist in pointing out racism in other people?
Well, what's important is that it's one thing to point out racism in other people, but then what? If the main point of this is to say there's some racism over there, well, you know, that's something that, you know, people have been doing for a good 150 years, and even if we use different tools these days, if the implication is that because there is racism, Black people can't achieve until America has undergone another socio-psychological revolution about how racist it is, that's a proposition, but it's not truth. The truth is that you don't need a perfectly even playing field before you can be the best that you can be. I think that we're being taught to settle for a kind of utopianism because there's this idea that the most important thing is to show that you know racism exists. And of course, that's not a bad thing. But when that's the main meal, you've moved from politics into what's a kind of an exercise, a kind of virtue signaling exercise. And I think that deep down, it ends up holding Black people back. And that's why I call the book Woke Racism. These people have excellent intentions, but they're not actually helping people who need help.
And so the religion that you specify here, the third wave anti-racist religion, I mean, calling something a religion can both elevate and denigrate. You're doing a bit of each here, it seems.
Mm-hmm. It's a bad religion, put it that way. And so there are good things about religion, and, you know, we're all familiar with them. But in this case, the religious aspect is that many religions require you to suspend disbelief to an extent. Beyond a certain point, you're just supposed to have faith. And when it comes to this religion, beyond a certain point, you're supposed to just say that you know racism exists, regardless of what you're prescribing or not prescribing for what actually happens to real people in society. And so what it means is that, for example, if you talk to a Black man in an underserved community, what he is more in danger of and will tell you is meeting his maker at the hands of somebody else who lives in the community rather than the stray white cop. Notice that we're encouraged to pay more attention to the stray white cop than the people who actually are more a part of a problem for that man's life than the stray white cop. The reason we pay attention to the stray white cop so much more is because it's about saying that you know racism exists, as opposed to what happens within those communities where white people are not the issue. That feels right to us now because of this imperative that we always signal that we know racism exists. But it stubs a toe. on the life of someone where they're much more in danger of being killed by somebody who's the same color they are, where if we rolled the tape back and rolled it out again, we would be as concerned with trying to change conditions in those communities in terms of violence, in terms of what we're not supposed to call black-on-black violence, than we would be about the stray white cop. We would at least pay as much attention to that as to the stray white cop. Notice that we don't? That's because something's gone wrong. We've gone from activism to a religion that loses sight of what really matters to real people.
Is that because the religion has some boundaries, like you do not criticize people outside of these boundaries, but you do in here?
Yes. And once again, that's a religious issue. If you criticize people within these boundaries, then you get pushed out a window. You have to be kicked out. You're defenestrated. That's treating people as heretics. We don't use the word. But if you're not sufficiently committed to what's called social justice, which, you know, under other words could be called faith if we were talking about a traditional religion, then it's not just that people have a bone to pick with you, but you have to leave the room. You have to lose your job. You have to be kicked out of the organization. All of that is spraying for heresy rather than, once again, being out in real communities helping real people. And so it ends up being this exercise. It ends up being this kabuki kind of performance rather than what people did as civil rights activists in the past.
John McWhorter is our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange from Columbia University. His latest book is called Woke Racism, How a New Religion Has Betrayed Black America. You might want to get in on this conversation at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. As always, you choose your words carefully. You chose not to dismiss the perpetrators as the woke mob or call them inquisitors. What term did you settle upon?
I call them the elect. And so I'm trying not to be too abusive, but these are people who think that they are ahead of the curve, that they possess an enlightenment that they'd like to give the rest of the world. They're good intentions here. They think that they've got the camera pulled far enough back to see that an uneven playing field, racist bias, systemic racism, means that only certain black people can achieve until we get rid of this systemic racism, until the playing field is perfectly level. But the thing is, black Americans are the very first people on earth who that argument has been imposed on. The idea that everything has to be perfect or even close to perfect, that white people need to all sit and realize something they haven't already realized, that's new. That's a really radical proposition that we're being presented with as truth. The people who think this way and will suppose that I'm completely off the rails or must have some sort of sinister agenda in saying these things, that's the elect. And so they think of themselves as bearing a higher wisdom, that the world would be transformed if all the rest of us would only listen. In other words, this is a religion. So yeah, it's not woke. Frankly, I consider myself quite woke. The issue is a certain kind of woke person who thinks it's okay to hurt people in the name of spreading a certain gospel. That's the elect. That's what I wanted to call the book at first, but I was told that wasn't resonant enough, and that was probably true. But yes, we have a new religion, and these people's name, for me, is the elect.
All right, so the elect, and you point out that the elect have clergy and original sin as well. Of course, that original sin is white privilege. It does exist, doesn't it?
Well, white privilege is very real, but the issue is what you do about it. And the idea that white people are supposed to sit around feeling bad about it, examining themselves for it, thinking of it as a stain that's never removed from them, that you have white privilege even if you're a white person who's living a really hideous and underserved life, and that you'll die with the white privilege, all that is very familiar. That sense of what white privilege is a replacement of original sin. And then there's clergy, where there are people who promulgate this gospel, especially articulately, where people, you know, listen to their teachings, even when the teachings don't happen to be new, but the idea is to listen to that person telling the story, so to speak. And I barely need to even enumerate who those priests are. And none of them have set themselves up to be priests. That's not what they think of themselves as. But in terms of this religion, there is a testament. It's a three-book testament. And the books are, I guess I'm going to mention them, written by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Brahm Kendi, and Robin DiAngelo. It's the Bible of the elect. And nobody puts it that way, but that is the way those writings are received by people who are members of the religion. And I really do mean that it's a religion. I'm not saying that as a pacha. I consider myself to have witnessed the birth of a new religion, where the only thing that obscures that it's a religion is that we don't use religious words to describe what this religion is committed to. But no naive anthropologist would see a difference between this new religion and older traditional ones.
You mentioned Ibram X. Kendi, so let's go in there because here's where we can get into a description of the difference between being anti-racist and non-racist. Is there some argument about whether there's a difference there, and is that part of where you're finding a fault?
Well, it's pretty simple. You're either racist or you're anti-racist, and there's nothing in between. I don't even need to criticize that notion. That's highly simplistic. We all know it. The question is whether you admit it. And to not admit it is because you think of the writings not as an argument to be engaged, but as scripture. That's the kind of thing that you allow of a religious document. That's it.
Our guest again is John McWhorter. His book is Woke Racism, How a New Religion Has Betrayed Black America. You can get in the conversation on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's discuss some recent events then, all of which are mentioned in the book. Giving a Pulitzer to the 1619 Project of the New York Times, painting Black Lives Matter on the streets, both in Washington and in front of Trump Tower in New York City, making Juneteenth a holiday. I mean, sure, these are symbolic, but do they represent steps on a continuum, steps towards something greater?
Well, Black Lives Matter is becoming such a diffuse concept that I'm never quite sure what we're talking about. If a certain kind of person wants to demonstrate their allegiance to the fact that we need to reform the police, that the police kill too many people, then I'm in favor of that. I think that we distort the extent to which police killings are all about black people. The statistics show, and we are not told enough, that the police kill many more white people a year than black people, often under the exact same conditions that we read about black people being killed. But far be it for me to say you shouldn't put BLM on the sidewalk. That's fine. Juneteenth becoming a holiday was a wonderful thing, but my observation about it is that when a million things like that happen around the country, and especially as many as have over just the past couple of years, wouldn't you think that a certain kind of person might allow that America is a little more advanced on race than we're often told, but instead, a certain kind of person still, you know, keeps going on TV, keeps doing podcasts saying that America is a nation with this racist stain running down the middle of it that never seems to go away, and that we know that because of what went on January 6th at the Capitol and online hate groups, and that's really the whole story. I'm not sure that's very constructive. It seems to me that that's evidence that we've got a religion, and that a religion often paints an eternally negative picture of the present with the idea that the past was wonderful and that we should be looking forward to a rapturous future. It all kind of falls into place. And as far as the 1619 Project, what went on there is that someone made a mistake. I make them. Well, the person who led that project made a mistake with a very dramatic claim that unbiased historians, including some who weren't white, made it clear was mistaken. And it was that claim about the Revolutionary War that got it the Pulitzer. If that weren't there, the 1619 Project is larger, but if that weren't there, it wouldn't have gotten the Pulitzer. And nevertheless, the project was given that and a great many other laudations out of an idea that the intent of it, the flavor of it, was more important than the veracity of it. That is a religious kind of reception, but also extremely condescending to the person in question, because the idea was if a black person makes a mistake, the flavor of her intent is what mattered rather than what she actually said. That is very close to saying, we don't expect these black people to be as bright as the rest of us, and so let's just applaud when they make interesting noises. That's not fair, and a lot of people aren't in a position to see that, but that was the nature of that particular event. I don't begrudge people Pulitzers, and many people are going to get Pulitzers for things that I don't agree with, but in this case, it was a really sketchy kind of awarding. But I think predictable if you understand that we're dealing with a new religious movement.
You know, it's interesting because I did go back and look at some of the stuff about the 1619 Project and notice that the New York Times went back and adjusted the claim about people were afraid of the British banning slavery and that motivated the colonists. The New York Times went back and added the word some. Some of the colonists were motivated by this. It was an interesting revelation on their part. The broader issue here, there have been gains in civil rights, and yet we do still have ground to cover. Does third wave anti-racism at least keep attention focused on a problem that has not gone away?
Well, it depends on what you call the problem. And so, yes, racism still exists, racial disparities still exist, and we have to figure out what to do about them. But often, getting rid of racism is not what you want to do about these things, because it wouldn't help. looking at the disparities and thinking white people don't like black people enough, we've got to get rid of the bias, is not always the solution. If you see a school where a standardized test is required to get in, and black kids, for historically conditioned reasons, tend not to be as good at standardized tests as other kids, to think, well, okay, to apply a test to children is racist because black kids aren't as good at it, is a very, very sloppy way of going at it. When 50 years ago, very similarly intended people would have said, how do we get black kids to be better at the test? Now it's considered unthinkable to ask that question. And needless to say, we are now just grazing an idea that black kids are incapable of submitting to a test of abstract cognitive ability. So let's just scrap the test, because the test is racist. Not just the test being racist as in the test called somebody the N-word, because of course we don't mean that. What we mean is black kids simply can't be expected to take such tests. And with the work of Kendi, for example, some of the things that he says are alarmingly close to blackness is somehow incompatible with taking tests like that, that somehow we display our intelligence in different ways. Well, is that a genetic comment, or is he talking about black culture, in which case why is it different with poor white kids? What do you mean? And, of course, this is the thing. None of that is spelled out, and nobody asks. And that's because these things are being put forth in not a mysteriously unquestioned way, but an understandably unquestioned way. We are talking about church rather than actually going through these things as a socio-political proposition. And it's got to stop because, for example, I don't believe that black people are incapable of excelling on cognitive tests. I believe that black people can be taught to. I'm being told that that makes me a white supremacist. No, I'm sorry. That makes me somebody who writes a book like Woke Racism.
Woke Racism is the book, subtitled How a New Religion Has Betrayed Black America. John McWhorter is the guest from Columbia University, and we're going to take a call here from Derek in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I think I understand John's theory, and I don't necessarily disagree. I guess I've got a comment and a question. One, the comment would be, I know personally I look at the police different from the black American's neighbor murdering he or she, because we authorize the police to carry weapons in our society and empower them. And then finally, I guess I would just ask you to comment on your view on reparations, and obviously that's a broad, wide topic.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for those, Derek. Appreciate it.
Well, reparations I'm in favor of, and I am very happy to see that they were granted in the 60s and 70s, and they had some good effects and some non-effects. And my question is, do we need more, and what kind would they be, and would they be seen as helping? So unfortunately, my position on reparations is a little hard to sum up in one quick phrase. But basically, affirmative action was reparations. Nobody used that word, but that is what it was in intent and effect. And there were other programs, all sorts of things that were done for black people, many of them still being done, where it's easy, unless you're elderly, to think that that's the way it's always been. But it hasn't always been that way. There were no such thing as these things before roughly the Great Society. So there's that. But then if we did reparations again, who would get them? Or if we're going to talk about just giving money to organizations, which one? You know, when's the last time you heard about the National NAACP having a major role in what's going on in black lives on the ground? So you think of, you know, the NAACP, well, what would they do with it? And maybe there'd be some ideas, but that's not the mic drop proposition. Would it be the National Negro College Fund? Would it be that? Would it be giving scholarships? Well, through who? These are huge questions. So that's reparations. And then also on the cops, I understand what you mean about how it's state-sanctioned murder, but that doesn't really help the mother who is burying her second son. Okay, one of them got killed by a white cop. One of them got killed by a guy who lives four blocks away. Why is it more of a horror that one of them got killed by somebody who was given a gun by the state? I think we're encouraged to think of it with that abstraction, because the one who killed the person, you know, with a state-issued gun is usually white, and we think, well, that's racism. I'm not sure how that helps that mom. And she very often doesn't feel that way. We feel that way from the outside. I think we need to re-examine what we think of as a priority.
John, to the point of calling woke racism a new religion, the banning of heretics or cancel culture by another name, and we've had guests who say that people should be called out for saying insensitive or outright racist things. Is there a middle point between those?
Yes, people should be called out for saying outright racist or even insensitive things. But where do you draw the line? That's not what's going on here. What's going on is not, for example, somebody, I would have to be sick to be sitting here saying white people should be allowed to do mean things to black people. What kind of psychopath would I be? The issue is what white people are doing to be accused of things like this. And often it's black people who are being accused of doing things like this. We've gone from calling out white people for racism, which I completely understand, to calling out white people for doing things like referring to reverse racism in a Zoom meeting. A curator of the Museum of Modern Art in San Francisco is literally fired for using the term reverse racism in an exchange. And there are all sorts of things that I list in the book where people aren't being called out for doing egregious things. Why would anybody argue against that? People are being called out for not observing the elect's religious line. We've gone from calling people out for constructive and understandable reasons to witch hunting. And the witch hunting is considered so normal that a certain kind of person watches it and actually supposes that these people deserve their treatment. Those people are directly equivalent to the way plenty of people felt in Salem during those witch hunting trials, where all of that looked perfectly normal. But pull the camera back and you realize that something has gone too far, whipped up by social media, and a sense that with fighting racism, fighting symbols and etiquette is as important as going out and getting out the vote, getting the ear of legislators, changing thought patterns. In other words, things that frankly are often less exciting than Twitter mobbing people for using the wrong term.
We're down to our last 90 seconds. Roy and Eugene sent in an email. He says, hi, in your mind, what form does allyship take? What are the most effective ways that white allies can help and support racial justice? Thanks, Roy and Eugene.
Roy, the answer is battle the war on drugs, which has destroyed black communities. Support vocational training, which will inestimably help, especially black men who are no longer rounded up into prison by the war on drugs. And make sure that poor kids are taught to read in the right way, because that problem hobbles an awful lot of black kids disproportionately from excelling in or embracing school. The real ally focuses on those three things. Black America would turn upside down in 25 years if we focus just on those.
You have a little more time to illuminate that point about teaching reading properly. How is it taught now?
Well, very often reading is taught through this, frankly, fuzzy notion that kids are looking at the letters and English spelling is irregular, and so they should learn to just recognize the words as chunks gradually, and reading should be taught as a holistic matter where kids are often thought to also need to learn how to be creative, learn how to tell stories, learn how to engage with people of different cultures. A certain amount of leftist multiculturalism is added in, and all of that is called literacy with a capital L. All of that is very well-intentioned, but what kids need to learn to do, unless they're learning how to read by osmosis from their overeducated parents at home, is learn how to sound out the letters. And believe it or not, there's an educational philosophy that says that that is too sterile and dehumanizing a way of teaching reading. It's not.
Woke racism. John McWhorter, thanks so much.